VanWe Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWe Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWe here alone today, except for my digital present son, who is...
I'm here.
He's there, right there on the other end. Sunny Orlando, Florida, or something like that?
Close to Orlando. Winter Springs.
Okay. Winter Springs.
Yeah. It's actually a nice little area to the northeast of Orlando.
Okay. And what's the big event?
My daughter has four soccer games today.
Four. I'm exhausted just hearing that.
Yeah, I'm pretty exhausted thinking about playing in four soccer games. So.
Jeez. Their legs are pretty short. You know, it takes a lot of steps to go with the length of a field.
True, but they also are young and have tons of energy. So.
Yeah, and parents will sleep well tonight. No doubt about it.
No doubt.
Well, since we're all here one way or the other, it has been an interesting week, and we'll get into all kinds of that. It's getting toward year-end tax planning time. We'll get into that, and, of course, we'll get into anything you would rather talk about if all you do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK. To the regulars, thanks for always being here. We depend on you, as you know. And we hope to be dependable enough that you can also depend on us. If you're new to the show and have found it by accident or on purpose, does not matter. Stick around for a while, and I promise you, you'll learn something. Even if you never use it, who can know enough? I certainly can't. Well, let's jump right into this. You know, sometimes I try to avoid the topic of the market just as long as possible. Other times I feel quite the opposite, and this week is a quite the opposite week when records were just made to be broken, and break them we did.
No doubt about it. It wasn't that long ago that Dow 30,000 sounded pretty ridiculous, but this week, maybe not so much. We actually crossed over 28,000 on Friday. It was kind of a funny trading week. Nothing much happened up until Friday. And every morning, it seemed the futures were down, and then during the day, midday, we'd see some buying and get back to about even. But really, there wasn't a lot of movement. And then on Friday, everybody started to pile in, and they kept doing it right to the close, which I love when we close strong like that on a Friday. It means that people don't want to take the chance of being out of the market over the weekend. So
yesterday's close was probably the most fun I've had watching something as silly as a market close. Basically, in all my life, it was fun.
I agree. It was a really, really fun day to be invested. And in addition to that, it was kind of unusual. Well, not unusual, but there wasn't a whole lot of news propelling it. The earnings season more or less wrapped up this week, and it wasn't bad, which I think helped, but it wasn't great either. So. It wouldn't be the catalyst that's pushing the market right now. The economic data this week was mixed with some bright spots, but not really. It wasn't outstanding either. So this really has to be on. I think on optimism of the China deal is what's really pushing the market.
The word for the week is Kudlow.
Yep. And then the thing that kind of confirms that is what you're seeing happen outside of the U.S. right now. There wasn't a big rally internationally this week, but it didn't pull back either. And international stocks have been rallying along with the U.S. for the past few weeks, which is really good to see. Hadn't happened in quite a while. So I think the optimism surrounding this trade deal getting done is really pushing, is really catching on worldwide.
Yeah, you got a lot of problems in China that could be alleviated, at least start that. And I think they have all the incentive in the world to do the right thing.
No doubt about it. They had some more bad economic data this week. It just really doesn't look very good right now for China. But they could fix it, and I think it wouldn't even be that hard if they cut this deal. So I don't know that it would be an immediate fix, but it certainly wouldn't hurt.
At this point, only 3.1% of our imports are even affected by tariffs. So you know they can't have a huge, huge impact if we eliminate some or reduce some. But it's the trend line, and I think more than anything else, it's the significance of the U.S. and China shaking hands on a deal. Who knows if they'll keep it? That would be a first in history. But that's not the point right now. Right now, it's all optics, as they love to say in D.C.
Exactly. I think that just the significance of the deal, of the phase one of the deal, would go a long way towards alleviating a lot of the fear of the unknown that's out there right now with businesses. And I think you'd see that reflected in the market, in the manufacturing numbers, and a few other places as well. And just in case you're wondering if the market is noticing how bad things are in China, it is. China is one of the only countries that is down more than 10% below its 52-week high, and one of the only markets that's trading below its 50-day moving average. So if you didn't think that the investors were noticing the situation in China, they are.
Yeah, and yet what happened in China this week? Did you see this?
Which thing? I mean, I saw some things in Hong Kong that were not very positive.
Well, no, Hong Kong's a mess. And it's getting to be a dangerous mess, and now there are schools that are yanking their kids off the island, that kind of thing. But almost perhaps missed this week was a little bit of news from Alibaba. Did you catch that?
About their one-day sales record?
Was that one!
Yeah, they had a really, really big... I think it was their biggest single day in history by a mile.
They call it Double 11. I call it my wedding anniversary. Some people call it Veterans Day. But what it was is huge. $38.4 billion dollars in sales, which topped even the sales from Amazon for the quarter.
Wow. That's huge. Yeah, that would, because we were saying that sales in November and December were going to average $1 billion a day online in the U.S.
Yeah.
That's across all retailers, not just one. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I don't know where the term Singles Day came from. I'm not really sure what that's about. But $38.4 billion more than Amazon's last quarter from online store sales. So let's say that even though things might not be perfect in China, it isn't all going to heck in a handbasket either.
Well, things aren't perfect here either, and we're still doing pretty well.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, there were this idiot, of course, one of the many idiots who wrote this article, had to throw in something negative because you don't write financial stories these days without something negative in it, right? The growth rate slowed. And that $38.4 billion was only up 26%. But in 2018, it was up 27%. So
it's better sell the stock.
Slowing down.
Sell the stock.
Yeah, exactly.
Sell the stock.
Do you know how much easier it is to sell 27% of something smaller than it is to sell 26% of something way bigger? Do the math, folks. I got some more headlines and stupidity, too. Man, they're making this too easy on me. I'm the kind of guy who likes to point out the stupidity and frivolity and the writing that goes on about finance. And boy, am I having a heyday. All right, we got to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to have Adam and, well, both of us actually do a little bit more on the market wrap-up. But first, I want to introduce a trivia question today, but I got to set it up a little. This week, the Dow finally started catching up with the S&P in that it was reaching higher and higher territory. It's been a little bit of a laggard. It's been 90 days since the Dow hit a new record, while the S&P has been hitting them fairly regularly lately. But on Tuesday, the Dow did set a record, and a strange thing happened on Wednesday, and I was watching this close. That's why I mentioned closing the market. Those of you who watch financial media about a minute or two to 4 o'clock, you'll see that it's usually got a direction. It's either drifting or it's rising. Most often you see a little bit of drift. That's why it hardly ever closes at the high for the intraday number. And on Wednesday, that pattern was maintained, and it did not look at a minute, two, or even right at 4 o'clock like it was going to set another new record, was going to pull back just a little bit. And I figured, okay, wait a day or two, you'll probably get another one. And after 4, it takes a couple, 3-4 minutes for the market to settle down as all the last trades are calculated. Well, it was down about 3 or 4 points from 28,000, and then it started to creep little by little, and it looked like it was going to close about 0.05 of a point or less, and then right at the last minute, they put the last number in there, and it was dead even. So it tied a record, but it didn't set a new one. That is really rare when all those changes in those 30 stocks all day long settle down exactly where they started. How rare is it? That's the trivia question. How many years to the nearest whole number has it been since the Dow closed 2 days in a row exactly the same? It's just a whole number. And like I said, it's pretty rare. It does happen, though. Anyway, I didn't want to wrap up a couple things on, for instance, what do you think the market's attitude about the impeachment ceremonies might be? They want to get rid of Trump, so they're ecstatic. Or are they laughing like we are, knowing it'll never happen?
I think that they are. They just think it's just a non-issue in terms of the economy, because I think that it's basically priced in that he's going to get impeached, and then the Senate's going to acquit. So it just doesn't matter. It's largely a political show, and I think if it was anything else, you would see the market react more than it has.
If you want to always, as we do, we always want to consider the ultimate downside risk, it would be that they succeeded. Mike Pence would change absolutely nothing. And then Trump would run again and get reelected.
Mike Pence would be a different type of leader, but he would. Yeah. That would be such a short time.
And economically, he's the same guy.
Yeah, he's probably not I know he's not as aggressive as Trump. And,
no.
And he wouldn't have some of those criticisms, but he comes with his own set of criticisms from the other side. But it's just such a non-issue. I think that you're seeing that in priced in the market. I mean, there's almost zero reaction during the beginning of the public impeachment trial. So that to me says this is just not really important to the economy of the United States. It might be important in Washington and to people who follow that kind of thing, but not to the economy.
I found a couple other things that were sort of intriguing, too. The quality of consumer debt is actually rising. Now, remember when we got blown away last time, 2006, 2007, what was happening was largely in the mortgage market, the loans that were being made and the products that were being sold regarding those mortgages were of declining quality, and it was due to stupidity on the part of Congress, as 99% of the time it is. And what happened was we started, obfuscating or something. You couldn't really tell what kind of loan quality was out there. They had gotten down payments on the loans down to next to nothing. They were doing what we call no docs or no documentation mortgages. These things are doomed to fail. And if the failure rate gets high enough, what happens? 2007, 8, and 9. Well, interestingly, mortgages now are of really good quality. Over 60% of them are going to people with credit scores over 780. And only 4% are going to credit scores under 620. That means that the vast majority of home mortgages are going to very creditworthy people. Well, how do you get creditworthy people? I have an idea. How about a booming economy where jobs are plentiful and pay well? And we have that. So we're supporting it, and it's reacting exactly as it should by making higher quality loans. And there's a similar thing, although auto loans will always be of lesser quality than mortgages, even auto loan quality is perking up a little bit. And that is really, really cool. The average auto loan now, or median auto loan, has a credit score behind it of 683 to 711. And that's above 670 or so, people are getting pretty reliable. But the best thing is a hot and growing jobs market. We've already seen wage levels accelerating, especially at the lower end. And things are just right because, you ready for this? I'm going to tell you the whole secret in a nutshell. Economics works. That's it. Good economics work. So I'm very happy. Very, very happy about that kind of thing. You cannot overemphasize the loan quality in looking at a market as large as the housing market. So for the month, quarter, and year, things look good?
Yeah, I think that's probably been one of the most frequent questions that we've received in our client meetings recently, is about the housing market. And is there another bubble coming? Is it overheated? And I think they're all legitimate questions, because we all lived through 2008, and anyone who lived through that is going to be afraid, and rightly so. But the fact is that has happened once in the history of the U.S., maybe twice, potentially, but for different reasons. And the likelihood of that exact set of circumstances, or even something close to that happening again, is very, very low. So I think the housing market's actually in a really good place right now, where there's a good number of buyers and sellers. Most of the purchases are going to people who want to live in the homes. We haven't been overbuilding by any stretch recently. So just a lot of those things that caused the last problem aren't around anymore.
That is absolutely correct, and wonderful news all rolled up in one. Now, you know what happens in 2 weeks from today?
What's that?
The big event for the year. That's when I come on the program and I finally answer the big question. Was it a good idea to get out of the market last December? And if you're listening, you know who you are, but you're not going to get out of me yet, because there's 2 weeks to go. But it ain't looking good.
Just never know.
No.
But, yeah.
The numbers are pretty compelling at this point, but you've seen what can happen in a couple, 3 weeks. You saw it last year in December.
Last year around this time, things started to get really ugly.
Stay tuned, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, headlines. My favorite came this morning, and this one caught me right in the funny bone. From our old friends at that liberal bastion called MarketWatch.com. You are ready for this? Today's obvious winner from MarketWatch. Quote, "It's great the stock market is setting records, but it's not because the economy is great." TRS or TDS? I couldn't just let that go, so I did pull it. You want to talk about Trump derangement syndrome. Here is Jeffrey Bartash's take on the economy, which is not propelling the stock market. Stocks on Wall Street have soared to fresh record highs, but it's not because the economy is flashing a big thumbs-up sign. It's not. So his first admission is it's still expanding, and sporadic worries about recession have faded again. In fact, I've got articles sitting right here that said they just mysteriously vanished. Yet, U.S. economic growth has slowed sharply from earlier in the year. There's little reason, Adam, you are going to love this. Are you sitting down?
I am.
Good. You're going to need to. There's little reason to expect a holiday season bonanza for the economy.
Okay.
I was going to ask you for a comment, but I've already gotten it.
Yeah, there's more on that. Walmart seems to disagree. I don't know if you caught that headline this week.
I did not.
Oh, yeah. They came out with a really nice earnings report. And what did they do? Oh, they upped their forecast.
Raised their guidance.
For holiday season. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Manufacturers cut production in October. Retail sales ostensibly rebounded in October after dropping in September, but a closer look suggests consumers are not spending as much as they were earlier in the year. And that is a more or less circular sentence to me. Most of consumers' additional spending went to gasoline stations, food, and motor vehicles. All necessities for most people. Discretionary goods were all noticeably weak. And then there's a little link to another story that says, Trump's agenda, a double-edged sword for the U.S. world economy. Really? I'll finish it up answering his own question. So why are stocks soaring? I'll do that as soon as we get back. Got to take another break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
And trivia question is still open, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 904-636-7888. You will reach Ken, whether you're commercial or residential. Does not matter. Regarding the records being made in the stock market this week, on Tuesday the Dow set a record, and on Wednesday it tied it. It closed exactly at the same number that nearly never happens, but it does happen. When was the last time in years, and I need it just to the closest year? That's it. Pretty easy thing. Shoot out a number, and we can bracket it anyway. So the gurus, I guess I can call them, who say the stock market rally is independent of the U.S. economy. Now, those of you who have been listening to us for a long time understand one thing probably as well as any group of people on earth. When politics enters into the market, which it does periodically, it is short-term and usually very volatile. What drives the market is the economy, its earnings, its expectations. Markets are generally 6 to 9 months ahead of the economy. Investors, as individuals, are often not real good about predicting and that sort of thing, but it's amazing what happens when you get millions and millions of intelligent people together. The result of that is generally a very, very good predictive ability. So if they're setting records now, I'm looking at the period from next May to November, which would be a really good time to have a good economy. I'm looking at that saying, this market is very confident that we're going to have it. So, according to MarketWatch, why are stocks soaring? Well, for one thing, the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates to shore up the economy. They lower rates to push investors out of bonds and into stocks. Really? Isn't that their job? Is this weird? Why do we say that the market is not based on the economy when it's the Fed who is doing their best to stimulate the economy? That has, it's an absolute non sequitur in my humble opinion. All right, next, the Fed rate cuts have also given investors greater confidence that a recession is further away. Well, no kidding. So what are they going to do? Are they going to hold off their purchase for a year to see if it really happens? Or if they're confident, are they going to go ahead and make that purchase, buy a home or a car? That's why we do it, people. Lower rates reduce borrowing costs for consumers. No kidding. And here's a kicker line, too. They generally lead to more good things for the economy. Okay, so where are you going with this? Your premise so far is leaving me behind. The central bank reduced rates mostly over worries that the U.S. trade war with China could endanger the economy, but tensions have eased as both countries return to the bargaining table. That's added to the confidence on Wall Street, just in time, it seems. And your point? Escalating trade tensions on and on. Households are in good financial position to spend. Savings are high. Debt is relatively low. Incomes are rising. Unemployment is at the lowest level in 50 years. Is he making his point or is he making my point? That's what I want to know. If consumers remain cautious, don't expect businesses to ramp up production. All right, this one is being folded up. and relegated to the trash heap of history, which is exactly where it belongs. The economy is good. The market is good. If you're an investor, you're smiling. Check your 401k statements, people. Not
well,
bad.
Everything, some things are good, but there are other things that are not. And
well, I agree with that.
I'm not talking about the economy. What I'm talking about is something that affects many of our listeners. Your Medicare premium. Did you see? I mean, it's kind of painful. It's
kind of.
Yeah, it's going up from $135.50 this year to $144.60 per month.
7%.
Yeah.
You get a 1.6% Social Security increase. You get a 7% Medicare increase. What's up with that?
Right, right.
Not so, your take-home pay.
How is it that the government always manages to tie numbers where the increases cause them to pay more? Those numbers always go up a little. But whenever it comes into, whenever it goes into them, the increases are big. And whenever it goes out, like Social Security, the increases are very, very small. It's amazing how that math works.
Well, the same government, the government that actually created the concept and the application of the CPI, applies it. And you would think, perhaps, now, you'd be wrong, but you might think, well, if they're going to use it to apply to government-related things, you should apply it consistently, right?
That's right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I agree with you. You would think that's how it would work, but it never does.
Okay, so Medicare, I just told everybody, up 7%. Social Security up 1.6%. So what number do you suppose they chose for indexing the tax brackets for inflation?
Are you asking me? Because I'm going to go with the lower one.
Or how about the upper one? Or, perhaps even a third one.
Oh, they used a whole different number? I didn't realize that.
3.67 is the percentage of they're expanding the tax brackets. Okay,
and they
folks.
Pulled that number from where?
Someplace the sun doesn't shine a lot, I gather. If you've been listening to me for years, you've heard the name Ed Butowski, who was a very well-known financial planner. I'm not even sure where his home office is. I think he's a Texas boy, but don't quote me on that. And by the way, he's from a very interesting family, but I digress. But he invented many years ago something he calls the Chapwood Index, Chapwood Index, which measures inflation in the bigger cities all across the country. He recomputes it every 6 months for all of the cities, and then he has a national average. Well, the first half of 2019 is out, and for this, and I want you to think about what I'm about to say. This is the inflation for 6 months of this year, 9.8%. If you think you're not really keeping up, if you feel like you're being a little bit squeezed in on a post-tax, post-medical, post-everything basis, there's good reason for that, because you're getting squeezed, and it's all due to our imperial federal government. And that is something on which the Heritage Foundation and I have parted ways, because they like this. And they have this convoluted thing about how it's going to sustain the Social Security system, which, by the way, while I'm on the topic and while I'm complaining, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 got through something that Congress has been trying to get through for a long, long time. It's called the chained CPI. That is an alternative method of calculating the Consumer Price Index that takes into account consumer, what they call preferences, but it's not really preferences, it's behavioral changes. And what it means is, if things get too expensive for you, you will settle for less quality, less quantity things. So if I'm out to the grocery store and I want to buy a nice steak and I find out it's too expensive, well, maybe I'll go over to the hamburger section and buy that instead. Well, no government, in my humble opinion, that purports to keep us up because of their consumer price index weighting of incomes. No government has the right to force us to accept less quality and quantity in our lives unless they admit it. And they are not admitting it, and Heritage is on their side on this one. I'm still a member, but I'm still angry at them. But anyway, you've got a lot of choices. What do you think the cost of living is for you? Would you agree it's 1.6, 3.67? Would you think it might be 7%, or would you think it's 9.8%? Just think about it and see. Go back in your records and see what you were paying for something a year ago right now, and I bet you're going to be mightily disappointed. Renew your homeowner's insurance, renew your car insurance, renew all kinds of things, and then pay your new medical bills and your look at your net Social Security check and that sort of thing, and you're going to find out that you are not living as well unless by some effort of your own you have created a situation with a rise in income. All right, we'll be right back. One more break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And we have the trivia question still sitting out there. How many years has it been since the Dow closed exactly the same 2 days in a row? Also, this segment sponsored by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. Did you want to hit something before I get a little further into the IRS changes?
Yeah, just real quick, which IRS changes are you going to...
increases in contribution limits for 2020.
Okay, this goes along with that. I brought up some negative news in the last segment, right. So I thought I'd bring some positive.
Good.
The IRS is actually proposing new RMD life expectancy tables to begin in 2021, mm-hmm. which is good news for those of you nearing 70 and a half, considering that the Secure Act looks dead on arrival right now.
That, yeah, thanks, Patty Murray.
Yeah, I know you're very fired up about that.
I am indeed.
Because that bill, which seemed like such a sure thing to pass, is essentially stalled right now. It doesn't exactly replicate that, but what it does is makes the amount that you have to withdraw every year from your IRAs lower.
It's the same predicate for both laws, in other words. People are living longer.
Yes. Right, exactly. And that those numbers haven't been adjusted for, I want to say, 50 years. Or it's been a really long time since those were put into place. That might not be the right figure, but they hadn't been indexed for people living longer, and therefore this would address that. And it would allow you to keep more money in your IRA for longer, which is always a good thing.
Yeah, and the way that looks, when it does pass, it will apply to everybody who is already 70 and a half and to everybody who is going to be 70 and a half. So I think we can all slow down our RMDs if we're already taking them. I don't think we're going to be grandfathered back to the old rates.
Right.
That's what it
looks like
right now.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
All right, on a similar vein, since we're going to talk about some good news, standard deductions have gone up for 2020. Married filing jointly is now $24,800. Head of household, $18,650. Unmarried individuals, $12,400. Married individuals filing separately, $12,400. And one thing that most people do not talk about is us more seasoned citizens who are 65 and up. We each get another couple hundred dollars added on to it. So all in all, that part is a very positive change. Now, speaking of more positive changes, the IRS has bumped up 401k contribution limits for 2020. And you might know that it was $19,000. That will be going to $19,500. That's for your own part. And if you're over 50 and do a catch-up contribution, that is also increasing. Sometimes they do one and not the other. This year they're doing both. $6,500 from $6,000, bringing it to $25,000 if you are of a certain age. So that's a nice thing to get more of it out of the taxable realm. You're better off. The phase-out ranges are also up. So phase-out ranges for the deductibility of an IRA are all bumping up about $1,000, sometimes a little bit more. 104 or 103 goes to 123. There's some really good changes like that, and you'll be able to catch them all on a website, or we might even link, when all of this is done, we might even put a link on our website, VanLeeFinancial.com, and put it over to what are you going to be able to do, because it will change your planning on your withholding for 401k and that sort of thing if you're maxing out. That is a very, very good thing. So not all news is bad news. As Adam said, I'm very exercised about the putting off the Secure Act. One person in the Senate is standing in the way. It passed the House 417-3. Now, that's not consensus, people. That's a landslide. If she thinks that she can stop 330 million Americans from getting a better deal from the government just because she's got a little problem with homeschooling, that she has a much bigger head than her whole person would indicate. I'm just
so ridiculous.
Upset.
It's really ridiculous. I have to issue a correction. Actually, the last time the RMD tables were updated was 2002. That 50 number was from another article I was reading about a different topic. So it has been 17 years, I guess.
I don't remember it because it was right as I was starting this business and none of us had any money yet. And we weren't close to 70. That change must have taken place just about the time things were getting going for us. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, since that time, the life expectancies for people over 65 have increased by more than 8%. So it's definitely time to adjust those tables.
Yes, I absolutely agree. All right, it's the time of year where scams are big. We all know that. Clark Howard has some wonderful things. Kim Komando has some wonderful things, just places that you can pick up little consumer type tips. One of them that is very hot right in this particular season is gas pump skimmers. You know what they are? A little false front they put on the gas pump. You slide your card in and it logs everything about your card, and then you put your PIN number in and it also takes that. So all of a sudden they've got your number and your PIN. Well, here's a couple tips from Kim to spot a skimmer. Take a good look at the gas pump panel and see if it's closed. And I believe in Florida, they all have that little wraparound sticker on them. When it's sealed shut, nothing is tampered with it. So look for those. And if your pump doesn't have one, use a different pump. Also, the card reader itself. If it doesn't look like the pump next to it or across from it, then you better figure out why and maybe not use that. Also, the biggest thing, you put your card in, try wiggling it back and forth. If it wiggles even just a little bit, be suspicious, because they're a very tight fit, as you can feel as you insert it and pull it out. It's very, very snug in there. If you're going to use a debit at the pump, you have the option to run it as a credit card, and you won't have to enter your PIN to do that. If you are not sure what's going on, go inside and pay. That's foolproof. As always, monitor your credit card. Now, that's something that I don't think enough people do. Every month when you get your credit card statement, match it against every one of your invoices and receipts, and you never know. There might be some little $5, $6, $7 charges on there that are scamming you. If you catch them right away, you have no problem. You dial the number for the credit card company, and bang, they'll fix it for you. So don't get schnookered, especially in this season. There's also an app for your phone to monitor skimmers. It's a Bluetooth function, and if you put in Kim Komando and Bluetooth credit card pump scammer, any of those keywords, it'll pop right up. And that could be a good thing, too, because apparently that's how people get them to work. All right, we got to go pretty soon, but I'm talking about fraud. The most common types of consumer fraud are fake lotteries, fake charities, and that's really big right now, debt collectors, credit and debit card fraud, of course. Mortgage fraud is big right now. But the big one is identity fraud, and identity theft you can discover it by having a monitor or monitoring yourself. If it happens to you, I promise you, you're going to be very unhappy. We have several clients who have been victims of this. when you try to file your taxes. They say, oh, no, that refund's been out, that sort of thing. You live, if you're listening to me on other than the internet from a long ways away, you are living in Florida or Georgia. If you do not have an IRS personal PIN number, get one. It is a little bit of hassle. It's easy to get, little bit of hassle to use, and by little bit, I mean negligible. But nobody can file as you unless they have your personal PIN number. They are free to residents of Washington, D.C., Georgia, and Florida. And why do you think that those three places are singled out to get free IRS PIN numbers? Could it be because those are the places that fraud takes place? I think it could.
Could be.
Go to IRS.gov, type in personal PIN number, and they'll assign you one. It'll come in the mail, and you are protected from one of the worst days of your life coming up. 5.5 years ago, the Dow closed 2 days in a row at exactly the same. It has not happened in between until this week, and that close was a record at the time. Since then, all three indices on Friday closed up, 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 settled up, up, up further, and they're all records. Gloom and doom is not prevailing in this market right now. Listen to us, and we'll tell you a lot of the good news. I may rant and rave a little bit, but a lot of the news is good. It's been better than I've seen it in decades. All right, everybody. Got to go. We'll see you next week, same time. This is the Banway Financial Hour.